right, good. So we got the bullshit out of the way while I figured out these microphones. That's so great.
Let's keep that going.
I've got Reach here, man. I've got Renee and I've got Tim. And Renee, I was just thanking you for coming on the ferry, but you didn't take the ferry. You actually drove from Long Island.
You know what? It was a lot shorter.
It
driving
was
95.
It can be.
It was just like it would have taken me an hour just to get to the ferry.
That's awful. That's awful.
And then an hour 15 ferry ride.
Yeah, right. And then then you have to deal with Bridgeport, which as someone who lives in Bridgeport and loves that city, no one wants to deal with Bridgeport.
So how far is the ferry?
The ferry is that's where the ferry lands.
Right there.
Tell me about Reach, because you guys have been doing this for so long. You've played on so many big stages. You've had so many big shows. And you've got the show at the Webster on May 17th. And that's with Tim Montana, who, you know, is awesome. But tell me about y'all.
So we started – it's kind of crazy. But I was so young.
Get a little bit closer by
Richie Cipriano. He was in a band called Sick of It All, right? Hardcore band.
Yeah.
So he was in,
should I know that name? Why do I know that name?
Well, he was in Sick of It All. He was an original bass player.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And I basically joined a band right after my wedding in 96.
Right after your wedding?
Yes.
That's when I quit all my bands, was after my wedding. That was the deal that I made. And then I tried joining it after my rejoining it after my divorce. It didn't work out. You can't go home. You can never go home.
You know what? My wife fully supported.
That's awesome.
I'm a lucky man.
Are you guys still married?
Yeah.
Nice.
Actually, it's going to be 29 years, May 5th.
Congratulations.
How crazy is that?
A Cinco de Mayo wedding you had.
Yes, we had one.
Oh, my gosh. That's a lot of fun.
I mean, all of our friends got so fucked up.
I bet, dude. Yes, absolutely. No, yeah, podcast. Yeah,
I'm clean and sober, so... I was clean and sober then too, and finding out later on, like some of my friends were tripping on shrooms, and I'm like, what the fuck, what were you guys doing?
It was just insane.
Everyone was trash, but having a good time.
I had my wedding was a bunch of like music festival heads. It was like, because me and my wife kind of, you know, we met in college, but she introduced me to the music festival scene, and you know, like I'd been playing in bands, but I hadn't ever been exposed to that before. So our wedding was somewhat similar. There was
and a lot of Filipinos.
Yeah. Because
I'm Filipino and they invited everybody.
Yeah. Everybody. Is that a party? I'm half Egyptian and I know the Egyptians party and they get down.
Listen, Filipinos are known for singing and eating.
Okay. Oh God, no. Yeah, singing is a thing. Like, you see the viral videos and like karaoke is like.
Well, I mean Arnold. I mean he took over.
Journey. That's right.
But I'm actually on a text message chain, right?
Yeah.
We call it Filipinos in Music and Recovery, right?
Okay. That's a solid and. Okay, yeah.
So, it's me, Mike Inez, Allison Chains.
Oh, yeah. And Ozzy, too. That's the guy who wrote the No More Tears bass line.
The
bass line, yes.
He wrote that bass line. This guy definitely helped save my life. I had relapsed after 25 years, but I'll get back to the whole band thing.
Sure.
We took like a big left turn. But anyways.
It's a fun left turn. Keep going.
It's me, Mike, Joey Santiago from Pixies, and Stevie D from Buck Cherry.
Nice. I just gave away their tickets the other day. That's a total non sequitur. But
I love those guys.
Yeah, man.
Actually, Stevie plays a solo on one of our songs.
No shit. Which one?
Only Way You Know.
Okay. All right. Right on. All right. So fun wedding is what you were saying, basically.
We had a fun wedding. So it's 96. I literally got back from Hawaii and was like, hey, you want to join Reach? And I took over. I had big shoes to fill because it had that guy. He was the second singer of Bad Brains.
He was
on the major label.
I don't got it.
Hold on. Oops. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I'll cut it. It's fine.
So he was. His name was Israel. He was on the Bad Brains record. He sounded exactly like. Like HR, right? So,
okay.
So basically, I mean, he was a sixth singer, and I had to replace him. But
that's fun.
Yes. So, you know what? We just, we were, I was ferocious. We were ferocious. We were out there giving flyers out, and like every show we were there, and we just became friends with everyone. And when all that like new metal stuff started happening, and the Warped Tour stuff, right?
Yeah.
So it was like, for me in '96, I was like really. I had '96. I was like, I think 2-4, maybe like 6-4, 2 years clean and sober, right?
Yeah.
And basically, I had come from like doing a lot of drugs, listening to a lot of Alex Jeans, listening to a lot of like Smashing Pumpkin. I mean, all that stuff that I love. When I first got sober, I just could not listen to it
That era is funny, because like I remember, because Tim, you and I are about the same age, remember growing up and you're listening to grunge and Alice in Chains and fucking Nirvana, of course, and it's STP. So cool. STP, exactly. And it's so cool when you're a kid and you're like 8-9 years old, and you're learning.
That's
how
where
to
we're play. At with
and
it.
That's where we were at, yeah. Exactly. And now I look back on it. I don't know if you feel this way. I mean, like Renee, you were kind of just talking about feeling this way. I listen to Nirvana now, and it's kind of hard for me, because when you think about the fact that Kurt died when he was 27. And I'm like, I just turned 38. Like, that's Jesus a Christ. Very young guy
that's,
to me.
You're a young guy. That's,
I know, I'm yeah, still young. Yeah, like, yeah. I'm still like, young. But when I meet
Kurt dying at 27,
Like, I know so many musicians who are 27 years old, and it's just like, now I'm just listening, and I'm like, damn, I feel like I'm reading some, like, really sad kid's diary, and it kind of fucks me up a little bit. You know what I mean?
For a long time, it, like, just triggered me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I was in rehab. My friend Mary OD'd, and then Kurt Cobain killed himself. In a few weeks. And I left rehab early, and the last time I ever did heroin was 6/3/94.
Got the date. Love that.
Because my first clean date was 6/4/94. So I had woken up in the hospital at OD'd, right? And I know we're totally going off the whole reaching.
No, it's all right. It all makes sense. It's part of the story.
It all makes sense. But getting back to it, like I literally, like my parents had to do the hardest thing in their lives. They literally went to the hospital, and I could not do this to my daughter. I don't think I could. Right. But my parents had enough faith that they were like, you know what, we love you, but you're not going to die in our house.
Yeah, yeah.
That was pretty, and it was pretty intense. I was homeless. I literally like. I had a bag, and I went to I went to a meeting, and I said I was home. Like I just OD, just got out of the hospital, and literally it's the only place that will welcome you.
Yeah.
Like I literally had a place to stay every night until I got a job and a place.
Wow.
Which is pretty insane. Sorry about that.
No, you're good.
Gets me fucked up.
No, it's all right, man. It's all right.
Anyways, it was pretty like. It was this whole new life, you know what I'm saying, where I like left everything behind, and I started listening. I just listened to everything but grunge, and I love grunge. It's my favorite era, right? I like it. I was lucky enough, I got to see Rage Against the Machine at Limelight. I got to see Pearl Jam at Limelight. So Rollins Band at Limelight, like all these bands, and I was like, a teenager watching all these insane bands play.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Me and my wife saw Alice in Chains and Primus. We saw the last show.
Such a great show. That's a great show. That
was Lollapalooza. That was insane. Dinosaur Jr. awesome. Played. It was incredible. But I got to see Green Day at Lollapalooza. Like we got there so early. They were playing 11 o'clock in the morning or 12. Some crazy time, and they were like blowing up at the time.
That would have been around 94. That would have been right around Dookie.
So I got to see all these bands play. So I think. When I first, I was just getting sober. I was sober, and I had a whole new set of friends, and I was living a whole new way. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, really taking a look at myself and taking inventory, and music literally saved my life. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I could definitely say some of those records, it was just amazing. Like, Rancid. And that was, Rancid and that Everclear record were, big Big, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
I had Outcome the Wolves on at the gym, basically. Like, I basically listened to that entire album. It's only like 45 minutes long.
So
you can crush a gym session that album.
You know who produced it? Is Brett from Bad Religion, the owner of Epitaph. He produced that record.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, right on.
Pretty sick.
Well, see, well, I guess Bad Religion, because they were all Cal. They were like all SoCal cats,
yeah,
right?
I mean those guys are OGs over there.
Yeah.
You know what? I mean, like, for a guy in a band to start a label that's still relevant and amazing,
yeah,
amazing, you know, great story in itself.
Well,
getting back to that.
Yeah.
Getting back to the band is that I was listening to all different music. I was listening to that Quicksand, Orange 9mm stuff, and then new metal came in, and I remember seeing, I was at the Limelight, it was Deftones, and I've never heard of them, Fun Loving Criminals, and Korn.
Yeah.
It was in, I got there, I'd never seen Korn, so I'm like, there's this band with dreads, and they're fucking don't sound like Korn. And I mean, literally, Kino got up there, screamed, and then did like held like this insane note. I was like, who the fuck is this?
It was, dude, Jonathan can rip. He's serious.
It was the Deftones that played first.
Oh, Chino. You did say that too. I'm sorry. So anyways.
Chino, I was just like, whoa. I was like, holy shit, you could scream and sing?
Right.
I was like, the guy could scream and sing? I was like, that was pretty, it was intense. It was definitely life-changing. Like, I'm like, all this new music is revitalizing, you know, me as a musician, right?
Yeah.
And I was in a band before. I had a demo deal from Mercury Records, right?
Yeah.
And I literally like I quit my band and joined Reach, and I still had the demo deal. So I went in there. I went in there, bringing in a possibility of getting signed to Mercury, and they literally gave us $10,000 to do a demo.
Love that.
So we did a demo with Don Fury, and he's like this famous hardcore guy in the city. He did like Youth of Today, Helmet, Quicksand, Orange 9mm, like all those New York bands. He did all that whole scene, Agnostic Front. Right on Spring Street, this famous studio.
Well, what's funny is that, you know, I was talking to, like Tim and I were talking about this a minute ago. Like, it's just how different, I don't know, it's different, and it's also the same, the way that you kind of make it now, the way that you, like, make inroads in the business, you know what I mean? Like, and, like, start to, like, build a career and make money. Because, like, for us, like, Tim, like you and I, I feel like we came up the same kind of way that it was in the 90s, where it was like, you know, you hand out the flyers and you paper, right. Paper your entire neighborhood, right? And if you're playing at the local skate park, then you go and but then all of a sudden, right when we were getting to like that touring age, like 18, 19, mm-hmm. then the whole thing kind of flipped to social media very quickly.
Yeah.
And it changed everything.
It changed everything. So we were talking about, Rene, you were talking about Warped Tour just a little while ago. But Tim, that's kind of how you came up. You came up very much through that scene.
So we did like all the whole Westchester. We started touring. We were doing South by Southwest.
And this is what year? I'm sorry.
This was a band they took out of high school in 2011, 2012.
That's great.
When we hit Vans Warped Tour, we met some people out in Albany doing this Albany Committee Festival, like music, like all this roundtable stuff. Yeah. And I met the guy from, what was it? Reverb Nation?
Yes, yeah, Reverb Nation. Yeah.
He was at their table.
Lou. So
Lou met me.
Worked at Lava when Reach was signed to Lava.
There you go. So I met him, Lou, at 2012. He helped us get onto Warped Tour 2013. So we did the Nassau Coliseum one. 1 year doing the early ball stage, and then the next year we put out an album, and that was the album that like we just got put onto Vans Warped Tour, and we're doing like 2-3 weeks with Vans Warped Tour. That was a lot. It was 2013, 2014, I think.
So walk me through, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to kind of connect the eras here, because it's cool. It's cool to talk about like the evolution of a band that's really come since the 90s and is still kind of doing it pretty big, you know, up to this day.
So the first time Reach played Warped Tour was
1999.
M&M,
it's a great year.
Blink, Agnostic Front, Andre 9mm, Vision Disorder. It was an amazing lineup.
Yeah, dude.
It was, I think, Seven Dust, too.
Was that Nassau, too, or did you guys do?
It was Randall's Island.
Okay. Randall's Island,
dude,
yes.
I got pictures. I mean, yeah. He played, it was just a sea of people. Well, that was my first big show ever in my life.
Yeah, I remember buddies of mine going to that show, and I wanted to go so fucking bad, because I lived in Manhattan at that time. I must have been 99. I would have been 12, 13 years old. You know what I mean? Oh, dude, yeah.
We were just like we wanted them on between, like, it was like, Luna Chicks, and then us, and then Eminem, back in a row.
So awesome.
It was just
99 Eminem at Warped Tour.
It was, but it was like this, but it was like this whole new scene. It was like Warped Tour, and then Ozfest, right. And then you go to Ozfest and Warped Tour. Like,
and Family Values.
Yeah,
can't forget.
I had both Family Values CDs, and I went to Ozfest. I never went to Warped. I've only played Warped. And
That's such a fucking flex.
Never went, only played.
I love
actually,
that.
Now that I think about it, I only played two.
Wow. Well, you guys are pretty fucking cool.
Just
you
flexing,
know, here.
Just flexing. Unnecessarily flexing. But I mean, like, yeah, it's hard for bands now to, like, I don't know how to get people, like, in the door to, like, build those relationships, build those connections. I, like, any advice to new bands, I have no clue.
Well,
no
like, clue. I was talking to my boy Drew Angus, you know, on the last episode of this, actually, right before, and he does so much social media marketing. It works great for him. He's got a great follower count, you know what I mean? He goes to all of these wild, small towns near places where stuff is going on. Like, he'll go to Tennessee, and he'll stay in Nashville, and he'll hang in Nashville, and he'll write with guys in Nashville, but he'll play at these towns way the fuck out there. Really? But he'll push like he'll push his ads on like all the meta stuff, like the Instagram and the and wow. Facebook really hard in those areas, and he'll sell like 100 tickets at a smaller wow. at a smaller spot and just keep himself on the
that's
road that
insane.
Way
wow
it's nuts, right? Like mm-hmm. it's that's kind of the new way of doing it. And I mean, Renee, dude, I could just sit here and just history lesson with you forever. I do want to bring it up to this show right now that you guys are
so
doing.
I'll tell you. Give me. So basically, we got it was night like let's see, it was me, Richie, this guy Juan, and Mike Marquez, right? Mike Marquez. That was, and then. Michael, Juan was the first one to say, "Hey, listen, I got a job." He was like working for like some big like you know company that did like, I just like business management for like you know,
oh, yeah.
Jay-Z and all these people, right?
Jimmy quit. Joey got married. Should have known.
Anyway,
yeah, no, absolutely.
So he bowed out, and we got this guy Danny, right? And then Mike, it just wasn't working out with Mike, so we got Dante, right? Who's still a drummer now, right? And you know we. Pretty much, and then we had two managers. We had a lawyer, right? Mm. So we got this guy, Jordan Feldstein, right? And Evan Bogart as our managers, right? So Evan's dad was Neil Bogart.
Okay.
You know, Casablanca Records, he signed Kiss.
You're saying Bogart and Casablanca, and I want to say the words Humphrey so badly, but is Neil there
Bogart.
Any connection at all? Right, yeah, no,
I don't think so.
I don't
Neil
got
Bogart
it,
was like this.
Yeah.
Legendary, you know, record business guy. He was just like an outlaw and like did his own, like he'd go to Vegas and like do like you know count cars and come back and sign bands. But he was just an outlaw. Anyway,
hell yeah.
So his son Evan was managing us, and then Jordan Feldstein, and he's coming from his dad's like a huge guy in music too. He was like the business manager for like Guns N' Roses and all this stuff. So they were our first managers, and our lawyer was this guy, Ian Montone, right? Ian Montone is one of the biggest managers in the world right now. He has Jack White, Danger Mouse, Foster the People. I mean, a lot, all those really, like, amazing, like, you know, left to center acts.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And he has a bunch of actors, and he's still my friend. So anyways, Evan turned out to, Evan first thing he ever got signed was Eminem. And
it's a great first signing.
Right. So what we have in common is that, and then we left in management and we were still playing and we were still friends with him. So they were like, Evan went on to become this humongous songwriter. He wrote SOS for, he wrote a bunch of songs, but I know he wrote SOS for Rihanna.
Yeah, okay, all right, yeah.
So, and then Jordan Feldstein was Maroon 5's manager, and his brother is Jonah Feldstein, Jonah Hill.
No shit, okay.
Yeah. So anyways, getting to it, it was me, Dante, and Danny, and Richie, and we showcased for everyone and their mom, right, everybody. And we got turned down, like, by everyone. And I remember, and my... our manager, Jordan, had his band, Karis Flowers, right? And they, I'd be like, you know, talking to singer Adam, like, no, I think we got turned out more than you, because he got turned out a shit, like, as many as us.
Yeah, you hear the word no a lot in the industry.
I mean, it was just, I think they did all right, because they changed the name in Maroon 5. Right. I got them signed. I got them a record deal. This is all in Reach, the Reach history, right? So anyways. Right. After all these insane showcases, Dante got frustrated. He left the band. We got this guy, John Camuzzi. He never really, I always wanted Dante in. John's a great guy, but like, sure. I had to live with him, and he believed in aliens and all this crazy stuff. And
aliens exist.
I believe it, but like,
we were just talking about Warp Tour. Tom was right. Tom was right the whole time.
I don't need, like, you know what? I don't need to hear about it, like, when you're stoned. Like, I'm like, room with this guy who's getting stoned. Anyways.
Yeah.
Literally 2 days, the next showcase, we got a humongous record deal.
Wow.
And this is
with which label now?
Lava Atlantic.
Okay.
And it's by Jason Flom, who's a legendary record guy.
Sure.
And just a few months before that, I had gotten that band, Karis Flowers, a record deal.
Yeah.
With this label called Octone.
Karis Flowers, what was their song? I know that band.
Turned it to Maroon 5.
Oh, that's right. Sick. No, that's right. That's right. That was a trivia question that I asked one time on the fucking air. That's why. I do this. But I do a trivia every
night.
You
can make trivia questions for you.
What was Maroon 5's old name? And it was Karis Flowers. So I'm sorry. Okay.
And just to backtrack a little, we're in New York. We're
it's
the
a
band.
True story. I really did that.
We're like the band that opened up for like every band from California that came. So
yeah.
here's a TBT today.
Yeah.
Look at this.
Look at that. So that's all right. So you're showing me right now an old flyer with a system of a Down. And then, of course, you guys and a bunch of other bands. Wait, Cypher, is it? Did they do anything? No, they didn't do anything.
But you know what? Yeah. The singer in Cypher is a humongous. He works for Live Nation, and he puts on amazing shows.
And as if to make the point, it's an all-ages show on a Wednesday
yep.
with five bands on it.
And it's in Mineola, and I think it was like a Ukraine, like, you know, something, or one of those things, or like a Greek. It was definitely like a hall, you know.
Yeah, right. It's not always there.
It's like a Yiddish wedding spot. Anyways, it was called Deja One, but also you know what? Papa Roach opened up for us. This is how we became friends with all these people.
That's crazy.
Papa Roach opened up for us at CBGB's, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just. It was like insane because it was like 2 weeks later they're all over TRL and just blowing like up like I've never seen before.
Oh, right, because this would be around 99
like 2000.
Yeah, right now. Yeah, 2000. So 2000, then Last Resort comes out and then they're everywhere.
And then I became what's it called? And then that same year, right, it was like, actually it was 2001, right? Now we're in 2001.
Okay.
And I think we did that show with them was 2001. It was right after 9/11. Reach played. And we were like, "Fuck this! We're taking the city back, right?" Like, so we played a show like at CBGB's.
Okay.
I with my good friend Jesse Mallon, right? And Jesse's really good friends with Green Day, and we played. And like Billy Joe Armstrong, literally, like, "Hey, can we use your equipment? We never played CBGB's before." They literally played for like 2 hours on our
That's
equipment.
Wild.
I got pictures. I mean, it was insane.
In 2001?
2001.
The hell are they doing in a venue that size in 2001, man? That's like post-Nimrod. They're huge at that point. That's 3 years before American Idiot. That's crazy.
So, I mean, he's real.
Yeah.
Jesse Mallon, just so you know, is like the real mayor of New York. This guy is friends with everyone. Yeah. Everyone loves that guy. I mean, Springsteen comes and covers his songs and, you know, and like plays with him. You know, it's just like, you know, he had an unfortunate thing happen to him. He had a spinal stroke, and the people that came out to help him were everyone like Elvis Costello to like Butch Walker to the Wallflowers to Springsteen. It's just a bleacher. It's just like amazing. That's how much love, how much that guy is loved. Anyways, getting back to Reach.
Sure.
So we got lucky. We played all these bands that blew up, right? And we're blowing up. And then I became friends. I remember I was at a K-Rock, like, you know, summer, like start a summer show.
Yeah.
And I was seeing Papa Roach. And we stayed friends. And we stayed friends. And then I met this guy, Chester, and he's in a band called Linkin Park. And this is all like around 2001.
That's weird. I've actually never heard of them before.
Yeah. anyways. so I ended up like, you know, being lifelong friends. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Me and then the guys in POD too. We just like, I mean, still to this day, like, they're still our homies. You know what I'm saying?
That's great.
You know, it's just like the power of music. So Dante's on the band. We got this guy, John. Our first tour was Papa Roach, right? We did our record in LA with this guy, Jay Baumgartner, at NRG Studios. It's like where everyone from STP, Limp Bizkit, Korn, like that whole like lit Eve Six, like Fiona Apple, No Doubt, like all those big records came out of that studio, right?
Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah.
So we did it with the owner, Jay Baumgartner, and you know what? We finished it. I definitely think I should have worked with the guys who did our demos, right? Because they were a little more hands-on. And listen, Jay is amazing, but if I worked with Rob Caggiano, he was a guitarist in Anthrax and Volbeat, right? And and this guy, Eddie Wall, they just, we weren't that fully formed band yet. Jay's like produced like System of a Down, Alien Ant Farm, all that stuff. Those guys were like fully formed, right? We weren't yet when we got signed. And, you know, the record had a few good songs. Like, I'm proud of the record, right? But, This guy.
This guy over here.
I've made the record I always want to make my whole life.
So let's get us caught up to the modern era. So where does Tim come into this whole equation?
You know,
right? Because we've got you know, System of a Down. We've got, you know, every awesome band of the early 2000s. Yeah. Now we have Tim.
All right, so
the way I said that sounded rude as fuck, and I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean it that way, but yeah, like talk to me about that,
so
about this meeting.
We got back together. It's just kind of crazy. So, the band broke up then, right? And then I stopped playing music as soon as I got the job I have now.
Yeah.
And that's when we were actually starting to play music.
And that's when we were starting to play music.
When they stopped, we started playing
music. Right. I started my first band in, I think, like 2001. That was something like that.
I think I stopped more like around, I'm at my job 11 years, like when I got that job, like 11 years, right?
Yeah.
And before that, you know, basically the record came out. We didn't, I knew it wasn't going to do anything because when you come out, like my sister worked at Elektra and Columbia. And you know, like if you're getting pushed, you're up front at Best Buy for like $5.99.
Mm-hmm.
But when you gotta find your CD in Best Buy, it's $11.99 in the thing, and there's only two of them.
Yeah.
You know you're fucked.
Yeah.
All right. So we know we were screwed up, and while we're getting dropped, what's it called? We're getting dropped. That band, Harris Flower, changed the name of Room 5. It's like everywhere I went. This love. I'm like, oh my god. And I literally made $1,500 on that. And I was so young, I had no idea I should have asked for a point. So I was supposed to have a point on that record that I did not receive.
That's tough.
And that's tough. I definitely, without a doubt, made...
That's that Songs About Jane record, right?
Yes.
That's a big record.
So I definitely think, just so you know, I definitely made at least like 12 to 14 people multimillionaires.
Right. Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. Do you want to make 13 people a multimillionaire? Because I'm here, man. I'm right here. And I,
Listen, I mean, I'm lucky enough that after the band broke up, I started doing A&R Columbia Records.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Matt Pinfield hired me. So I not have to work a regular job.
Yeah, sure.
So anyways, so getting back to how they came back is that my close friend killed himself.
Okay.
I was in a massive depression. and I had relapsed after 25 years of being sober.
Yeah.
And it was a rough road, and I was like, it was like dark, man. I was just like, and Dante and Marcus from POD and Jacoby, and I mean, literally, they were calling my wife. They were like, my friends were, you know, your friends love you, and they're worried when they're calling your wife and not talking.
Right.
You
know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Sorry. I just got to compose myself.
You're good, man.
So,
take your time.
They basically said, get the band back together. You need to get your shit out. You know, stop thinking about, you know, it was tough because he was in the biggest band in the world.
We're talking about Chester, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
That's why it was hard telling this part of the story. Anyways, Chester always wanted me to play music. Okay. He would be like, hey, you want to open up for us? I'm like, I'm not in a band anymore. Like, what the fuck?
That's hard to say no to, but yeah, no, right.
Like, my ass would have been like, yeah, I'll figure that out.
I mean,
we'll open for you guys. Fuck you.
I mean, I'll start a band, dude. I don't care.
I'll
give
start
a
the
fuck.
Band. Let's go.
Let's go.
I'm like lucky enough that I have a lot of close friends that are humongous. Like STP. Chester literally called me up when he was a singer and was like, yeah. I have to quit the band. Somebody's going to. Something if I don't quit the band,
yeah.
And help me find a singer. So, the singer now, Jeff Coote, is my boy that I got in there.
Right on.
So,
right on, man.
I've done a lot of other things, but like me playing music again because I felt like in my past we're always playing to like get on a bigger tour, get a management, get a record deal. So our first show back was opening up for POD.
Yeah.
And you know, it was like, we were playing because we love playing music. And I was like, holy shit, I love doing this. And it was not like, you know, it was pretty amazing. And I'm like, because when I sang those songs again, I was like, this is where I should be playing hard rock, you know what I'm saying? This kind of music. And
hang yourself back a little bit. Get yourself center frame on that. But
anyways,
but don't look at the screen, too. Okay.
Anyways.
I'm guilty of that. I do that all the time. I do it all the time.
So basically, you know, we played a show, and I just, I was doing work with this guy who was the head of Century Media called Don Robertson, and his name is Don Robertson, one of my closest friends now. But I brought this band to him, and he signed this band called Lovely the Band, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have a Lovely the Band story that I may or may not tell based on how the rest of the story goes.
So basically, like Maroon 5, who I shopped to everybody, and everyone turned me down. I literally got them signed to a label. Here's this alternative band. We only had two offers, one from Don from Century Media and one from the guy who lives in Connecticut, Alan Kovac, and his label, you know, has Five Finger Death Punch, all this stuff.
Yeah,
I had two basically metal rock labels that were giving them off, right? And I remember, and the first time I heard this was like, Mitchie the singer was like, you got to hear my new stuff. And I'm like, all right, meet me at Energy. And me and Chester were there, and we listened. We're like, holy shit, this is fucking awesome, right? Literally, me and Chester, and Chester's actually like, oh, you know what? You should do some reggae stabs in the pre-chorus. And he actually did it.
Nice.
So anyways, he went there, and he, Century Media transitioned to The Orchard, and we got a $10,000 EP deal that night.
Hell yeah.
And we're like, wow, now that we're trying, things are happening. And then,
it's weird how that works, right?
And then, what's it called? But and Danny and Richie, then we got on these humongous festivals, and Danny and we're getting shows, and Danny just couldn't do it. So Tim played a show with us opening up for Pop Evil, right?
Yeah.
And then Danny came back and it was like back and forth. And then right before we were supposed to play Incarceration.
Yeah. I would have done it. Why did you ask me?
No. You know what? We didn't know. All right. So Richie and Danny both like right before they're like, we can't do this anymore, right?
Yeah.
So it's me and Dante, and we're like, you know what? We're having a good time. We're going to do it. So we didn't do Incarceration, and we got AJ and Tim, right? We played with AJ a year before that. with Pop Evil, and he knew the songs already, and he was awesome. And just, you know, it's easy when you're playing with musicians that, not to bang on anyone else I play with, but it's easy to play with, like, the level of talent musicians like him and AJ are. Like, yeah. Literally, like, we don't have to show them note by note by note. Like, they know. They can figure it out.
Right.
It's just, it was, and it was just like, wow, I get to hang out with these cool guys, right?
Well, Tim is such a pro. Like, I saw your other band, the Nuclear Heartbreak, you know, a little while ago, mm-hmm. and I just, you know, every member of that band, don't get me wrong, is a total professional, but it's just, it's funny because I know your background and I know how long and how much time you spent on the road working professionally. As soon as the band starts, right, we're in this smaller theater. It's a nice theater, but it's a smaller theater. As soon as the band starts, Tim is like, he's got all the moves. He's doing the jumps. Oh, God, doing the, you know, like, his background vocals are right there. He's not shying off the mic. And I know you don't like singing. You did it very well.
I'll make him sing.
Make
him sing all the time.
It was,
yeah, I know.
He was actually complaining about that before.
But never want. I just want to swallow rock bass.
But it was so cool to just watch you immediately. You can tell when someone's a professional. You can tell when someone's. I was there with my girl actually. I literally leaned in. I was just like, that guy's been doing this for like 20 plus years. I mean, and you can immediately tell just the stage presence. You almost. You're so engaged, but you almost look bored a little bit. You're just like, yep, no, this is the thing that I do now. I'm gonna hit the jumps here. I'm gonna hit all these notes. I'm not paying attention just really to what I'm playing.
Years of being in the van, doing it for so long, and then just
so
like that's it.
Also, we got Tim back in the band, right? So basically, AJ, we were playing. We were opening up Quicksand at Bowery Ballroom, which was sold out, right? And that was our first show back with a new lineup. And then AJ got COVID.
Yeah.
And I was just, I literally had pneumonia. Everyone's getting COVID. I had pneumonia for like 3 weeks. I thought I was going to die.
That's awful.
And I was like, when we played that show, I remember, I was like, I thought I was going to pass out. I was like, literally like cold sweats. And I just left right after the show. And Quicksand's one of my favorite bands. And I left right after that. And then the next show, AJ got better. It was cool because Richie came back in and stepped in and played that one last show with
us.
That's right. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
And I mean, these guys are my brothers. I love these guys.
Of course.
So our first show with AJ Tim was like, Welcome to Rockville. And it was insane. It was just like
Daytona International Speedway.
Oh, sick. Oh, that's a great, that's a cool ass spot to play.
Big venue.
Yeah, dude.
And we were the first band to play. So we're like, there's no one here. Next thing you know, it's like, holy shit, there's a ton of people here.
Yeah, dude.
It was pretty intense. And you see just like people coming to us, like not knowing who we are just by liking our music. I knew right there it was awesome. And, you know, we had to make one other change, which we made recently.
Sure.
That just really solidifies the band. We had to let somebody go. But
now you've got the lineup. You know, you've got the lineup, and you guys are bringing it to Webster, man, like May 17th. So, I mean, like, tell me about the state of the show now. What's, like, your, you know, like, well, just tell me, what does the show look like?
A lot more room on stage for the rock, that's for sure.
Right, well, yeah, you only had the four guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We had two guitars, so it was just like, and one guitarist made a lot of noise in between songs and stuff, and always tried to sing over me and
so like, now we have space to play our song, and like, we're not getting in each other's way. There's room for every instrument. You'll hear every instrument at the show. It's like just a good level of the right stuff for the right song when you see us live now.
And which is a big difference. We haven't played with one guitarist in like, I don't know, three so many decades.
We had to convince them. We're like, bro, like, he'll step up. He's got it. Like, let him have his room to just have that one guitar. Listen, kill it. And we've been killing it.
I'm totally down with one guitar, but when the record comes out, everyone's going to know we need two guitars.
Oh, you got a layer in the studio, but that's different. But, you know, that is different.
They're big parts, though. He knows it. And the songs are like huge parts that like you can't play with just one guitar.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Like really, you know, important parts.
Well, dude, you guys are doing, you know, it's May 17th, Reach. You guys are playing with Tim Montana.
This is how much we love Tim Montana.
Tell me.
So I became friends with him. I signed POD, the second time I signed POD. I entered their last record, and I got him their manager, who's this this guy Darren Red Light in Nashville, right? So he was managing Tim Montana at the time, and you know I met him at the first time I met
Louder
him,
Than Life, right?
The first Louder Than Life when you weren't there. We had a shitty ass show because he wasn't there.
Right.
You know.
I make the good shows work.
We never have a bad show without him. With him, you know what I'm saying?
I believe it.
But so anyways, I met him there. We became friends, and when we saw the lineup, we're like, "Yo, bro, we're playing right. You know, we're playing the same main stage." First of all, we're like, "Am I reading this right? We're on the main stage with like Hailstorm, Pantera, Cypress Hill, like insane."
Fuck yeah, in the membrane.
Like crazy, Five Finger Death Punch, like. Like how sick were those? You know, it was just insane.
Best shows, biggest shows I've ever played.
We're like,
yeah,
how the
main
hell?
Stage. Main how stage. Are we there?
How are we in the main stage, right?
Well, I'll do it. I'll do it.
I'm not gonna complain, right?
Not at all.
So, you know what? We put out good stuff. You know, we're always helpful to people. I've done so many favors for a lot of people, and never asking anything back.
Yeah.
And people just want to help us out. And honestly, it's easier to help people out that you like when the music's there, and the music is there. This record that we're gonna put out, it's called Ride or Die, and it's just about all the people that stand by you through thick and thin. And I'm very excited to put out this record. We made this record, I think, for like 2 years, and it's definitely exactly how I want it.
Well, dude, I'm excited to hear it. I'm really excited to check out the show.
Oh, yeah.
Is what I'm really excited for, because I haven't been to Webster in forever.
Man. I've played there a few times, but also, this is how cool Tim Montana is. All right.
Yeah.
When we played Sacramento, it would have been insane amount of money to rent equipment there or bring our stuff there. He let us use all his stuff.
Oh, what a guy!
Like he was playing after us, so we used the whole back line, and you know, you just had to bring your bass, right?
Yeah, we talked to all the guys. They're all super chill. They're super nice. His whole band is really great people too. And he put the record out last year.
Yeah,
that's killing this.
It's amazing.
Savage.
Yeah, actually, I had one of the guys I managed. This guy Josh Wilbur, who's done Lamb of God, Korn, all this stuff. He mixed the Tim Montana record, and that's another thing. I work.
Yeah.
Working music too,
sure.
Like for my day job.
Sure, of course.
So I'm doing all this stuff and just meeting people and that guy's really talented and he's got a sick voice, man, a really sick voice.
I heard some of the shit, man. Yeah, it's gonna be, dude. It's gonna be great. So go if you're listening to this. All right, where's the camera? You go to see this show May 17th. Tim Montana and Reach, baby.
Yes.
Renee, Tim,
thank you so much.
Boys, it's been a real pleasure, man. Thank you guys so much for making it out.
Sorry for my ADHD.
I love your ADHD. It matches mine. It matches mine, and I think it's fantastic.